Today's other top story, what could be an historic opening with Iran. The man in charge of negotiating a nuclear deal, Foreign Minister Dr. Javad Zarif, is here live for an exclusive interview. First, let's go to ABC's chief foreign correspondent, Terry Moran, for more on a dynamic week of diplomacy.
Absolutely, George. What we have seen this week represents the possibility of a stunning diplomatic breakthrough, but there is a lot of work to do.
It was a week of head-spinning history in the making.
Just now, I spoke on the phone with President Rouhani of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
And so, with a 15-minute phone call, 34 years of bitter relations thawed ever so slightly. 1979 was the turning point. The Shah of Iran, a key American ally, toppled in a revolution, replaced by the fiercely anti-American Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini. And a few months later, the storming of the U.S. Embassy in Tehran. Enemies ever since. But the election of 64-year-old Hassan Rouhani in June has sparked hope. Rouhani has launched a charm offensive toward the West in speeches, on Twitter, and in interviews, including with Christiane Amanpour on CNN.
I bring peace and friendship.
So when he arrived in New York this week for a meeting at the UN, anticipation was running high, and Secretary of State Kerry met with his Iranian counterpart, Javad Zarif. But this new chapter is fraught with risks for both sides. After years of deceiving international agencies about its nuclear program, can Iran be trusted? President Obama seems skeptical.
So the test will be meaningful, transparent, and verifiable actions.
Another problem, Rouhani is not the ultimate power in Iran. Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khomeini is, as Rouhani made clear in his CNN interview.
The Supreme Leader, I can tell you, has given permission for my government to freely negotiate on these issues.
The next steps in this diplomatic journey are likely to be small ones, not big ones, confidence-building measures in advance of a meeting in October. Iran might agree to halt the enrichment of uranium to 20%, considered a dangerous threshold, could agree to release Western prisoners, including the American Christian pastor Saeed Abedini, and the U.S. could ease some sanctions. But, George, the bottom line is, after these historic headlines this week, now comes the hard part, the really hard part.
And let's get more on that hard part now. Thank you, Terry. From Iran's foreign minister, Dr. Zarif, he joins us now. Thank you for joining us. You know,
good morning.
Good morning. Welcome back to This Week, your first time in 26 years.
Yes.
In a long time. And, you know, this week, analysts in the Middle East have called the events a game changer. One even likened it to the fall of the Berlin Wall. Is that your view? Has there been a fundamental shift in the relationship between the U.S. and Iran?
Well, I think that we have taken the first steps to address an important issue both for Iran, for the United States, and for the international community, an issue which I believe should not have become an issue in the first place, but it has unfortunately become a global problem, and now we need to resolve it. And the resolution of that issue will be a first step, a necessary first step, towards removing the tensions and doubts and misgivings that the two sides have had about each other for the last 30-some years.
That is, of course, the nuclear issue. But there's a lot of skepticism, as you know, about the ability of President Rouhani and you to deliver on any deal. Analysts look at the fact that there wasn't a handshake, only a phone call, as a sign of weakness. There have been demonstrations greeting President Rouhani when he returned to Iran, and many Western observers believe that your supreme leader simply will not do what it takes to back up a deal. Can you assure Americans that he will indeed back a deal you negotiate?
Well, Iran and the United States are similar in many ways, and one is that we both have pluralistic societies where differences of views exist and differences of views are aired, and I think it's very healthy. Of course, we need.
But he has the final say, correct?
Of course, we have to do it within an atmosphere of mutual respect and mutual interest. We believe that if the United States is ready to recognize Iran's rights, to respect Iran's rights, and move from that perspective, then we have a real chance. And we negotiate with the full authority of the leader. We know what we want to achieve. We know that Iran is not seeking a nuclear weapon. In fact, what I told the foreign ministers and secretary of state in the meeting of EU 3 plus 3, or as you want to call it, 5 plus 1, I told them that having an Iran that does not have nuclear weapons is not just your goal. It's first and foremost our goal.
As you know, there's a lot of skepticism about that, but Secretary Kerry, in an interview that's going to air tonight, has laid out some concrete steps that Iran could take in order to prove they don't want a nuclear weapon. Here's what he had to say.
They could immediately open up inspection of the Fordow facility. They could immediately sign the protocols, the additional protocols of the international community regarding inspections. They could offer to cease enrichment above a certain level.
Is Iran prepared to do that?
Well, Iran is prepared to start negotiating. I'm sure Secretary Kerry does not want to dictate to us what we should or shouldn't do. We are willing to engage in negotiations. Of course, the United States also needs to do certain things very rapidly. One is to dismantle its illegal sanctions against Iran that are targeting ordinary Iranians. Now, in spite of all the claims to the contrary, it is impossible to open a letter of credit from a bank to buy medicine for Iranian patients because there has been, in fact, blind sanctions against banks dealing with Iran. There has been a lot of arm twisting by the United States, not by the entire government, by certain elements within the U.S. government, which have tried to put pressure on ordinary Iranian people. And the ordinary Iranian people showed during the last election that they put their trust in the ballot box, they put their trust in the government, they want the government to deal with the rest of the world from a position of strength through flexibility, but insisting on the right.
And
so sanctions are not useful tool of implementing policy, and the United States needs to change that.
I understand that's your demand, but in return, is Iran prepared to stop enriching uranium at the levels they are now enriching it?
Iran is prepared to negotiate. You know, no country does or should negotiate on the air.
But that's on the table?
Negotiations are on the table to discuss various aspects of Iran's enrichment program. Our right to enrich is non-negotiable.
But you don't need to enrich it above 20%, which is only used for military purposes.
We do not need military-grade uranium. That is a certainty, and we will not move in that direction. But what is necessary is for the two sides to sit together and reach a common objective. We should not have two competing objectives. You see, let me explain to you that after the breakup of the Soviet Union, one of the concerns that you had in the West, and I was living here and I shared those concerns, was that all these scientists that were involved in USSR nuclear program were now unemployed. And they could go to the black market seeking employment opportunities. Now, we have a large pool of Iranian scientists. We have an indigenous Iranian nuclear program. Israel cannot kill all our scientists. They have unfortunately assassinated some of them, and nobody has raised an eyebrow about it, which is a source of great concern for us that the world, the United States, which is supposed to be against terrorism, is allowing terrorists to kill innocent Iranian scientists. But now let me go to the issue and say that all these scientists, the best way to ensure that Iran's nuclear program will always remain peaceful is to make sure that these scientists operate in a facility or facilities that are observed by international observers, monitored by the International Atomic Energy Agency.
Including surprise inspections?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we already have surprise inspections. We are moving in that direction. As you know, when I was negotiating our nuclear issue in the early 2000s, we were implementing the additional protocol on a voluntary basis, which provides for surprise inspection. Unfortunately, at that time, the U.S. administration at that time had different
views. But there were some facilities that were hit.
Different objectives. No, all facilities at that time, we're talking about 2003 to 2005 when we were negotiating, all facilities were open to the IAEA. The IAEA was able to observe them all.
Only after you were caught.
And the IAEA said that although Iran had not declared its activities, now that we see those activities, none of them had been diverted to military use. So there is no question that Iran never had military intentions. There may have been technical problems, there may have been problems of transparency, and we are prepared to address those problems. But we need to, you see, lack of confidence is unfortunately mutual. As the president said, both President Obama and President Rouhani have said, there has been 34 years of the building up of this mutual distrust. We need to move in that direction of removing some of that mistrust through mutual steps that each side needs to take in order to convince the other side that its intentions are positive and for a better future for all of us.
And a big player in all this, of course, is also Israel. Prime Minister Netanyahu is on his way to the United States right now to meet with President Obama, to speak at the UN General Assembly. On his way, he at the airport, his departure, he called the moves by UN President Rouhani this week a smile attack. And the British Sunday Times is reporting that he will be presenting intelligence to President Obama that says Iran already has enough enriched uranium to produce a nuclear weapon, is developing a nuclear detonator, and is testing missiles that could carry nuclear warheads. Your response?
Well, a smile attack is much better than a lie attack. Mr. Netanyahu and his colleagues have been saying since 1991, and you can refer to your records, that Iran is 6 months away from a nuclear weapons. And we are how many years? 22 years after that. And they are still saying we are 6 months away from nuclear weapons. I think this six-month time limit is something that is called.
So you're not 6 months from a nuclear weapon?
We're not seeking nuclear weapons, so we're not 6 months, 6 years, 60 years away from nuclear weapons. We do not want nuclear weapons. We believe nuclear weapons are detrimental to our security. We believe those who have the illusion that nuclear weapons provide them with security are badly mistaken. We need to have a region and a world free from nuclear weapons. I appeared before the International Court of Justice about 16 years ago and argued for 90 minutes that the use of nuclear weapons under any circumstances is illegal. Our leader has a religious verdict that the use of nuclear weapons, even possession of nuclear weapons, is contrary to religious doctrine. So these are our positions. Israel has 200 nuclear warheads. Israel is the source of insecurity in our region. Israel is the source of aggression and violation of human rights of the Palestinian people. It should not have the audacity to continue to lie to the American people and to the world and mislead everybody.
But if you don't want nuclear weapons, why enrich uranium to the levels you're enriching uranium?
Because that's our right. We needed, you see, we came to the market requesting, we own 10% of a European company that produces enriched uranium called Eurodiv. We have not been able to get a single gram of uranium from them for the past 30-some years. We have not been able to get the uranium that we need for the Tehran Research Reactor, which was accidentally built, not accidentally, in fact, intentionally, built by President Eisenhower under the Atom for Peace program. But not only the United States is not providing the fuel for that research reactor that it's itself built in Iran in the 1950s, it is preventing others from providing us with fuel. So what should we do? Should we lie down and die? No, we don't do that. We go and rely on our own scientists, rely on our own capabilities, and we produce them. Now, after they were hoping that we couldn't produce them. Now, and after we were able technologically to do it, now they say you shouldn't. You see, we cannot start history at the time of our choosing. The background has to be addressed, the historical aspects have to be addressed, the historical sources of Iran's very serious and deep mistrust of the behavior of the United States need to be addressed, and we should take concrete steps, one after another. We have not forgotten the fact that when Iraq used chemical weapons against Iran, not only the United States didn't condemn it, it went out of its way to blame us for the use of chemical weapons. So these are all facts of history which are very fresh in the minds of Iranians. We are willing to show flexibility, not forget that. We may be willing to forgive, as President Mandela said once, but we're not going to forget.
You mentioned history. Both you and President Rouhani have gone farther than your predecessors in acknowledging and condemning the massacre of Jews during World War II. In fact, you had a tweet at the beginning of the Jewish New Year where you said that Iran has never denied the Holocaust. The man who was perceived to be denying it is now gone. Happy New Year. This was to Speaker House Leader Nancy Pelosi's daughter. Yet the website of the Supreme Leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, right now, on his website right now in English, he refers to the myth of the massacre of the Jews known as the Holocaust. So do you endorse or reject the Ayatollah's belief that the Holocaust is a myth?
I have spoken to the leader on this issue. He rejects and condemns the killing of innocent people.
But is the Holocaust a myth?
No, the Holocaust is not a myth. Nobody is talking about the myth. If it's said, it's a bad translation, and it is translated out of context that they are using it. He was talking about the reaction to somebody talking about the historical incident and requiring research about that historical incident, and said, what is it that people are so upset that somebody is simply asking that we should do some studies
of that?
The word
myth upsets
people. But you see, this is the problem. When you translate something from Persian to English, you may lose something as the film goes, lost in translation. You may lose some of the meaning. This has been, unfortunately, the case several times over. The point is, we condemn the killing of innocent people, whether it happened in Nazi Germany or whether it's happening in Palestine. One crime, however heinous, and Holocaust was a heinous crime, it was a genocide, it must never be allowed to be repeated. But that crime cannot be and should not be a justification to trample the rights of the Palestinian people for 60 years. We should abandon this game and start recognizing the fact that without respect for the rights of the Palestinians, we will never have peace in our region.
Will the translation be changed?
I'll talk to them.
Let me ask you one final question. You've spent a good part of your adult life in the United States. Your children were born here. As I mentioned, you were on this week 26 years ago. When you hear those chants that come up so often in Iran, death to America, death to America, what do you think about that? And what can you say to those Iranians who say death to America?
Well, I think they're talking about the policy. They're not talking about the American people. We have been time and again, the leader, various presidents on the record, that we have no quarrel with the American people. American people are nice, peace-loving, generous people who come to the aid of people in need all over the world. And this is what we respect have a lot of admiration for. It's the policies of the U.S. government, which has unfortunately been the source of instability in our region for many years. The United States supported dictators. It would be amazing for American people to know what types of governments in our region have been supported by the United States.
So we have a ways to go.
But the Iranians feel it with their flesh, the type of regime that governed them. Because of the support of the U.S., some of the countries in our region continue to experience this. The fact that the United States supports whatever policy is followed by Israel is another indication that the United States needs to revisit some of its policies and move forward.
Dr. Zarif, thank you very much for your time this morning. Welcome back to This Week.
Thank you.